Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries.
So another point that I wanted to make that, you know, came up in discussions about tremors was the idea of dystonic tremor. That's another tricky area in tremor assessment, and that's why tremors are so complicated and difficult and challenging, is that yes, we make some basic rules, but sometimes the rule bend or overlap, or you start having things that are following a mix of rules between one and two, and that's where things become confusing. But it's important, like Elon Musk says, to always come down to first principles. I just mentioned the first principle about arresting tremor, that a true resting tremor must go away with action for it to be considered a resting tremor. That was the first principle. So you always fall back to it when you're not sure in complicated cases. So the first principle of dystonic tremor is a tremor that is caused by intermittent but partially or fully sustained contraction of a muscle. So a muscle that contracts, holds, and let go causes a dystonic tremor, and is usually a group of muscles, so that does the same action. So it's, for example, wrist flexors. When they're contracting and then letting go after a brief pause, that's what creates a dystonic tremor. It is different from other phenomenologies because in myoclonus, the contraction is also simple and is also often a group of muscles doing the same action, but is much faster and there is no sustain or holding at the end. It is also different from essential tremor or other actions and resting tremors because the contractions again has a sustain at the peak and let go. And so there is not a smooth curve. The curve goes up and then holds and sustains at a plateau and then lets go. And there is no alternate contraction of the antagonist afterwards. So if the wrist flexions are moving, then the wrist extensors are not contracting afterwards to create a true tremor or a resting tremor or action tremor or postural tremor. So see, this first principle that a dystonic tremor is caused by a group of muscle or a single muscle contracting, holding, and letting go. The holding may be for a very few seconds. Anything more than a fifth of a second is a holding because that's now is beyond the time limit for myoclonus. And that's what a dystonic tremor is. So how do we pick that up? How do we try to figure out that a dystonic tremor is happening, which is that a group of muscles are contracting, holding, then letting go? We figure out it in various ways. So the simplest way that is described in the current classification of dystonia is that there should be some features of sustained contraction in that area, or what is called dystonic posturing. So if you see a dystonic posturing in that area, for example, it's the right arm which is having the tremor. If you're seeing the dystonic posturing in the right arm, then that suggests that that tremor is a dystonic tremor. Actually, by the current classification, it says that by definition, it's a dystonic tremor, and there's no debate about it, because it's so hard to debate about it in many cases. So that's one rule you can follow to look for dystonic posturing. However, the dystonic posturing may not always be obvious, visible right away, or apparent. Dystonic posturing does not have to be present at the same time as the tremor. So the tremor may be present and then the tremor is gone when the patient got up and started walking. And now you're seeing the dystonic posturing, right? So the patient is sitting and having a tremor in the right arm. You're not sure if it's a dystonic tremor or a resting tremor or what's going on, because a dystonic tremor can be present at rest and may go away with action. But then the patient gets up and starts walking, and you have him walk on his toes, walk him on heel, and now you see that the right hand starts pulling and the wrist starts flexing and coming in while they're walking, especially when they're doing these tasks. And now you know that that tremor that you saw at the wrist when sitting is dystonic tremor, because there is a wrist dystonic posturing that you're seeing when the patient is walking. Now, for many people, and including me, believe that the dystonic posturing does not have to be on that joint. Any dystonic feature in that arm, it should suggest that that tremor in that arm is dystonic tremor. And actually, I will expand it and I will say that if you see dystonia anywhere else, if you're seeing dystonia in the foot or in the left arm, and there is a right arm tremor, you should pay extra attention to make sure that it's not a dystonic tremor. So because, you know, dystonia present in one area often means that the dystonia present in another area. So that there may be a dystonia in the right arm and you're not clearly seeing dystonic posturing. When there is dystonia in the neck or face or jaw or left arm or foot, So you should pay extra attention and take extra time before saying, okay, it is not dystonic tremor in the right hand. And it's possible, right? It becomes complicated. You have a patient who has a resting tremor in the right hand, has Parkinson's, and have a foot dystonia or neck dystonia, and now you could just jump and say, oh, this is a Parkinson and dystonia, and the tremor is a Parkinson tremor, and that's usually true, but it's not always true, and that's why sometimes patients are referred to me saying the patient is not getting better with levodopa. It's that the tremor was dystonic, and that's why it's not getting better with levodopa. It's not levodopa responsive dystonia. So what are the features otherwise that you can look for? I think in my orientation to movement disorder video, there is some dystonia examples. But the examples are that the dystonic tremor follows these rules. Number one, because the tremor is a muscle contracting and then holding and letting go, the tremor is usually directional. It follows the direction into where the muscle is contracting. So the wrist flexion will be the prominent movement, while letting go of the wrist will be the less prominent movement. You will kind of see an asymmetry between the two direction of movement, flexion versus extension of the wrist. It's also directional, meaning that it does not go beyond the null point, so you're not seeing the antagonist contracting and only the agonist contracting. It is also directional in the sense that there is a sense of a jerk of the hand coming in because of that muscle's contracting suddenly and then holding. So the sudden onset is similar to myoclonus, but it's different than myoclonus because then there's a sustain or a hold more than a fifth of a second, sometimes many seconds, right? Or a really, really long hold. The other features you look for is what is called the null point. Null point is this concept that the dystonic muscle is trying to achieve something. It's trying to achieve a contraction. If you allow it, if you let it achieve that contraction, then it will stop fighting with you. So if the dystonia is of wrist flexion and it's causing the wrist flexion kind of a dystonic tremor or flexion extension tremor, if you ask the patient to flex their wrist, that muscles now got what they wanted and the tremor would stop. And if you go opposite, if you do extension of the wrist, the tremor should get worse. So there is this idea of a null point that between the hand completely flexed when the tremor is gone and the hand completely extended when the tremor is really worse, there will be a certain degree of the wrist flexion that will happen when the pull of the muscle will disappear. And that usually has to do something with the severity. With a very severe dystonia, you will have to go all the way in with your wrist flexion before that pull will disappear and the tremor would stop. With a mild dystonia, that only mild flexion will make the pull disappear and the tremor will stop. But each patient will have a null point for that tremor. This becomes complicated because the tremor may be present at more than one joint. So there may be a wrist extension flexion tremor and an arm or forearm supination pronation tremor mixed in. And it may be that the null point is coming up for one thing in one position and for another thing in another different position. There may also be a dystonia of elbow at extension flexion of the dystonic tremor of the elbow that may only show up when the hand are close to their face, for example, when trying to eat with a spoon, and may not show up when they're writing because the elbow is fully extended and they say, you know, I'm writing fine and that's not what bothers me. But when you have them grab a spoon or think of a spoon in their hand and bring them close to their face and hold it right there, that's where the dystonic tremor of the elbow may show up, although you were originally only seeing kind of a fine enhanced physiological tremor of the fingers or a wrist tremor. So there may be a different tremor in different joints, and there may be a combination of the tremor. You may have a dystonic tremor at the wrist, but a dystonic tremor at the elbow, but a resting tremor in the fingers or the wrist, and that you have to treat each tremor separately. Each joint shaking is a separate tremor. And yes, it may all be resting tremor. There may be a resting tremor of the finger extension flexion, a wrist extension flexion, a hand pronation, supination, which is common in Parkinson. This is a common pattern of Parkinson, that there are resting tremor in the limb involving multiple joints, the finger hand joints of the fingers, the wrist joint, the elbow joint. But it may be different tremor at different joint. And you have to treat them separately. So that was my spiel or details or take on dystonic tremor.
To learn more about the mini fellowship, visit our website for University of Nebraska Medical Center, Department of Neurological Sciences, where you can be part of the community and ask us questions. You can write to me on mdclinicforyou@gmail.com. It's mdclinic4u@gmail.com. And follow me on YouTube for longer discussions by searching for Danish Bahati, D-A-N-I-S-H space B-H-A-T-T-I. You can also find me on Twitter @Danish Bahati_MD and on LinkedIn.